This is Blue Moon. It's the original fan-made Manchester City podcast. Coming up, we've got news and views from City's Week. It's your club, and this is your show.
So, a week on from our last podcast, and a lot has happened. Manchester City were crowned champions without even playing on Saturday. They lifted the trophy on Sunday, and by Wednesday, they were playing a very entertaining dead rubber at Brighton's Amex Stadium. It's a bit difficult to know how to approach these games on today's Blue Moon podcast, but don't worry, we'll find a way. With two straightforward games, we're going to be taking the opportunity to pull out and look at the bigger picture. Why are City spoken about the way that they've been spoken about this week? Is it as simple as the charges brought by the Premier League, or is there more to it? We'll also take a look at the turning points that brought City to their fifth title in six seasons, and there's the final day of the season at Brentford to preview as well. I'm David Mooney, and joining me for this week's show, I've got two City fans. We're joined by Alan Phoenix-Bates.
Howdy.
And Liam Wright.
How are we doing?
I'm not too bad, thanks, Liam. Not too bad. Alan, are you well?
I'm fine. Oh, well, wildly overconfident as well.
Excellent. Liam, are you well? You've had a long day. You've just literally just got back to Brighton, haven't you?
Yeah. It's I'm glad that the even though I've got a bit coming up over the next couple of weeks, I'm glad when it'll be all over, because a 10-hour round journey over the past 24 hours, it wasn't ideal, should we say.
Yeah, it's a long one. But City didn't need to do anything this week, Liam, to end up lifting the trophy. So the pressure was off. Have you just been able to enjoy the football?
Yeah, definitely have been able to enjoy it, because it feels like a very long time due to, you know, this season and last season as well. You know, how the Premier League went, that it feels like such a long time since we've been able to go to a match and just enjoy it and just go for loving watching the team play and loving watching football. You know, it basically feels since the return to football from the pandemic, every game that you've been to matters. So it was quite a nice break from that.
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, let's start with the Chelsea game, Alan, because that one, I mean, City having won the title on the Saturday, Guardiola very much named a side that was, we're already champions, are we? Okay, then, here we go. Have a bit of this. And it was kind of a game to match, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was that midfield was the midfield of, that was a real tinkerer's midfield, wasn't it? I mean, it was just Calvin Phillips. But, can we talk about? Is it too early to? Is he another of these players that people are going to say won't fit in, and then he suddenly does, just at the point where you've nearly given up?
I don't know. Have you given up?
I haven't given up yet. I know. I'm sure. I bet a few people have, but I haven't, and it's. I don't know. There was a time they were saying that was Grealish a mistake, you know. And the way I see it is that it seems to take time to get Pep, unless you're Erling Haaland, of course.
Yeah, of course.
They just walk into the team and just bish bash bosh. You've done it.
Yeah,
but it's been a difficult, torrid time for Calvin since he left Leeds, hasn't it? Really?
Yeah. Just in terms of that, Liam, you look at the rest that Guardiola's wanted to give a lot of the team. I think, is it a concern for Phillips that basically these games have been dead rubbers? Chelsea was a dead rubber, Brighton was a dead rubber, and he's played 90 minutes in just one of them.
Yeah. I think with Pep, you've got to win his trust, haven't you? And I think Phillips and I think Cole Palmer as well, where you thought at the start of the season they'd probably play quite a lot more than they have done. And, you know, I was expecting last night and the game on Sunday for them both to be getting 90 minutes out of it, and that wasn't the case for either of them. So I think it's good to see them get a bit more game time, but I think there's still a long way to go until we can really depend on them.
Yeah, in terms of the kind of second season aspect of this as well, Liam, the difference, I guess, I wonder from Grealish's point of view is that Grealish played a lot in his first season, and I mean we've barely seen Phillips this year.
He did, but he didn't at the end of the season. Really, yeah. I know he played away at West Ham in that penultimate league game, but I think I know he came on at the, in the Bernabeu as well. But usually, when it's like the running and the games matter, that's where it shows a bit where you are in Pep's mindset, I think. And yeah, I mean, Jack did play a lot of games last season. There's no denying that he did turn out for a lot more than Phillips has. But, you know, there's been a number of things. Phillips has a lot of injuries at the start of the season with his shoulder. The whole World Cup in the middle of the season was quite disjointing. But, I mean, I'm not going to write him off yet or anything like that, but the two games that stand out in my mind about Phillips are the Southampton away game in the Cup and the Bristol City away game. And I thought in both of them, it really showed how, even though he's like coming to deputise Rodri, when Rodri's on the pitch, everything goes through him. He's like a, you know, what did Mourinho once say about Makaleli? Like he's the battery in the watch. Everything goes through Rodri all the time. And Phillips, the players just weren't looking for him in the same way. And I was really excited about Phillips, purely because I went to when England played Germany in the Euros two summers ago. And I hadn't really understood the hype about him because I'd never seen him in the flesh. And he was brilliant that day. Him and Declan Rice played in midfield together. So I always thought, you know, if he was available, I'd like to see him at City. But yeah, I think there's been a few factors in there for him this season where he's not really had much of a go. But at the same time, I don't always feel like he's taken the opportunity that he has got sometimes.
Yeah, it's kind of a bit of six of one half dozen of the other is the good old phrase. Mm. Obviously, with two finals coming up, Alan, it's kind of a weird situation that City find themselves in. We'll get to the Brentford game a bit later on in the show, but obviously with the team that you picked against Chelsea and then the team that a much stronger team against Brighton, it kind of strikes me that we're in a period of it's almost like pre-season, but pre-season plus, if you know what I mean, competitive games that are useful.
Absolutely.
And like an opportunity for rhythm and just kind of get the momentum going ahead of the finals.
Well, the Brighton game I thought was particularly useful because Brighton had something to play for. Now I've got a lot of respect for Brighton and Hove Albion as a club just lately. They seem to have a very, very canny way of running the club itself. This massive database of very young South Americans that they've got, that kind of thing. They've got a real eye for sustainable value for money. And tactically, they're sound as well. And that I thought that might have gone by the by a little bit when Graham Potter went up to Chelsea. Mm. But it seems that there's a club in... It seems that there's a holistic thing. Now, as a City fan, I kind of warm to that holistic thing because that's a similar kind of approach to what we're trying to do with the CFG, you know. But... That made them a very useful opponent for us. And I would say altogether a very absorbing game as well. But both of those games, I think it's a matter of, it's balancing two things, isn't it? It's making sure you don't overplay. I mean, I'm sure Pep's got a starting 11 in mind for both the FA Cup final and the Champions League final. But it's a matter of making sure, A, you don't overplay players, and B, you don't let them get rusty.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, I don't know about you, Liam, you're obviously in the ground. You kind of, I guess you kind of taken up by the emotion of the game and kind of the spectacle of the game. Now, it was, by all accounts, quite a great game to watch. I have to level with you. I didn't see it. I was stuck on the M62. So I was listening to it on the radio. But it sounded like a fantastic game to kind of have that momentum side of things as well. But obviously there comes the risk of, in a game like that, players exert themselves more.
Yeah. I mean, I may have had a few drinks last night, so I don't remember the game that well, to be honest. You know, after a five-hour drive, we did get ripped into it straight away, and yeah, the pressure was off, shall we say. So a bit more time on the concourse than maybe if it mattered. But no, Brighton are a good team. You know, I think they... I know Newcastle are obviously in the top four, but I prefer watching Brighton over Newcastle. So I would say that sort of the best team outside of the traditional top four, whatever that means these days. But so, you know, they've got really good players, really good to watch, and they're dangerous. And, you know, they're a threat to everybody they play. So, yeah, it was a good opportunity last night for City to try and keep the levels up without, you know, hopefully keeping everybody fit. But I think the big thing for us now compared to a couple of years ago is we do have the opportunity to be making five subs. So, you know, it might be coming up that he sort of gives someone an hour or gives someone 45 minutes and just to keep them ticking over. And I think that's going to be really helpful for us because, yeah, early in the season, Pep doesn't like making subs, does he? So, yeah.
Yeah, if he's not making subs now when there's literally nothing to play for, then he's never making them at all, yeah. Is he? That's the that's the thing, yeah. Alan, just in terms of injury risks, are there any players that, like, it's difficult because we can't spend the entire season going, the schedule's relentless. Just look at this, you know, there's games left, right and centre. How can these players play all of these games and then get to the point where we've won the title and go, God, there's too many games. We can't afford to let any players play any games here because we've got to keep them rested and ready for the finals. So it really is balancing that injury risk, I guess, because
my heart was in my mouth when John Stones went down.
Yeah.
Right. Really was. I mean, it seems it's just something and nothing. It was more tiredness than anything else. But yeah, oh God. I mean, Stones has been instrumental, one of the most instrumental players in this recent run for me with his change of role. He's taking on what you can only call the John Stones role now. He's going to be one of these players who is referred to in that way. You know, like the Cruyff turn, the Stones role, you know.
The Rico Lewis role, maybe?
Hey, you know something. There's a possibility. I thought he was playing very creatively last night. Very creatively indeed at times. But I have to say these nice things because his dad's as hard as nails, isn't he? So, it'll come seek me out, probably, but there you go. But, it is, I think it's, you need to definitely, you can't let players get rusty. And as Liam was saying, the five subs help. They really do, you know, and it's a matter of just making sure that people have got, yeah, they've got bounce in them still. It's hard at this end of the season. I mean, I say you look at other teams, look at the way Arsenal fell apart towards the end. That's a measure of, I don't think they bottled it. I think they literally just physically ran out of steam.
Yeah.
You know? And it was unusual. And injuries to key players at the wrong moments, these things happen. Plus it's Easter and it's Arsenal.
Yeah, I will disagree and say that they bottled it more than
it.
Yeah, more than some of the biggest bottling plants there are out there. But you know, here we are.
Yeah,
let's finish this little chat about the title win with this.
It's a quiz on City's latest title-winning season.
There we go. I've not done one of these for a while, and I thought I'd treat the two guests that haven't been on for a while to a little quiz. Now, the game is simple. Six questions, three each, one behind each number. Pick a number, 1 to 6. Give me the correct answer to score the point. If it's a tie, we do have a tiebreaker at the end. Alan, I'm going to let you go first. Would you like question 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6?
Oh, I'll take 5 with extreme trepidation, please.
Question number 5. City were 2-0 down at half-time in the Premier League and came back to win 4-2 in 2 games this season. It happened against Spurs and which other team?
Oh, bloody hell. I'll have to pass that.
Liam, do you know?
Crystal Palace.
It was Crystal Palace, but I'm not giving you the point. Doesn't carry over. Hard luck. Pick a number, 1, 2, 3, 4 or 6?
6.
Number 6. What's City's lowest Premier League position all season? It's tricky, this one, isn't it? Because you don't want to go too high because you think, oh, that's big-headed. But also, you know that they've won quite a lot of games early on.
Yeah. I'll go 4th.
4th is absolutely spot on.
Oh, lovely.
There we go. They were 4th after the opening weekend, and that's the lowest they've been all season. So, 1-0 to Liam. Questions 1 to 4 left. Alan, what are you having?
Questions 1 to 4. I'll take 2, please, Bob.
Question number 2. Who is the only City player to be shown a red card in the Premier League this season?
Ah, bloody hell. Did Walker get one this season? I don't think he did. I'm going to say Walker just to get me out of this questioning hell.
It wasn't, but you were in the right position. If you flip over to the other side, it was João Cancelo against Fulham back in back in November.
Course. Back in November, I've slept. There's been a World Cup between.
Yeah. Now, nevertheless, swing and a miss. Liam, what are you having?
Yes.
Four.
Question number four. Who is the only player to miss a Premier League penalty for City this season?
Gundogan.
It was Gundogan against Leeds. Could have had his hat-trick. Yeah. Didn't do it.
That made Pep very happy as well, didn't it?
It did, yeah. It's secured a 2-0 win for you, Liam, which means, Alan, there's only dignity to play for now. Question one or two?
Oh, one.
Question number one. Who is the only City player other than Erling Haaland to score a hat-trick in the Premier League this season? It would have been Gundogan if he'd scored that penalty.
It would as well, wouldn't it? Hat-trick this season, it's not Erling. Is it Mahrez?
No, he scored in the FA Cup, unfortunately. It was three against Sheffield United. It was Phil Foden back in the derby.
Fodders.
Yeah, 6-3. Him 3, yes. Haaland 3. There we go. Liam, that leaves you with question number 3. Who were the first team to take points off City this season?
Newcastle.
It was indeed Newcastle. There we go. 3-0 draw and 3-0 win. Yeah. Sorry, Alan.
No, don't worry about it. I'll come back to talking the usual crap.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Listen to it. Drink it in.
Now then, we've had a few emails this week about the coverage of City's title win from some quarters, including other fans online or in workplaces, all that sort of thing. So let's talk about that for a little bit now. Alan, I'm going to start with you. Do you feel like City get the credit that they deserve, or do you feel like they deserve more credit for what they do?
Well, every so often when I'm reading the press, you get this feeling that perhaps we might be getting the credit we deserve for a few days, and then it comes back to the usual moans. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, everybody was going mad about John Stones. People were talking about how Pep was changing football in a way that the treble-winning side of 1999 just didn't, in terms of tactics, in terms, you know, because that side was a, the United side of that season was a fairly traditional 4-4-2 for the most part, wasn't it? With a very drilled back four. It looked like table football from the top. But the fluidity, the fluidity of formation, everything like that, we get all this, and then all of a sudden it just disappears and we're back to the same old gripes about money, and we're same old gripes about nations, dodgy nation states running clubs, that kind of thing. And the, I think, at times, absolutely exhilarating football that we play is glossed over completely.
Because, I mean, the argument is always, it is always about money, and it is always about City having the resources. But ultimately, Alan, they still have to go out there and play the football. They still have to go out there and win the games.
Absolutely. Give me the money that City have. Put me in Pep's place and watch it all fall apart within minutes.
I would kind of like to see that, you know.
Oh, yeah, but I wouldn't want to do it to City. I mean, put it this way. If it was a nation state taking over United, I would happily do it. I'd bring the place down from the inside. But, you know, it's money does not buy success. I mean, look, I mean, people had a good laugh at us not long after the takeover, didn't they? Remember Stan Collymore going on about the cost of our back four compared with the cost of Burnley's back four, when we were going through that debilitating series of draws just after I started busking, which were all my fault, apparently. We took our time to get it right. And I mean, the club was in dire straits when the takeover happened, one has to admit. But we had to build that, and we had to build that infrastructure. And you can't just throw money at something and expect it to succeed year on year. I mean, I think Newcastle are going to get quite the it's got a learning curve in the Champions League, shall we say?
Yeah.
We're going to get quite... I mean, we had a horrific learning curve, I thought, in the Champions League, from that first game against Napoli, which scared me half to death, through to where we are now. It's not been easy, has it?
Yeah, not at all. I mean, Liam, we will come to the Premier League charges, because I think we have to kind of mention them in the context of this, but just ignore the charges for a second. Do you feel like City has simply judged on the money that they've spent?
I think slowly some of our detractors are moving away from just saying about the money, because, you know, Chelsea and United, well, Chelsea especially in the past 12 months, but, you know, United probably over a 10-year period are, you know, there or thereabouts with what we've spent. I think, you know, the benefactor that we have and everything that goes with it, you know, regardless of the charges, I think it's more to do with where the money's come from, as opposed to us spending money, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But yeah, I mean, you know, what we've done this year, having won the league 3 years in a row, I mean, that's been done a handful of times in English history. You know, I think what, we're the fifth or sixth team to do it. You know, the barometer that people judge, will always be saying they'll judge City on, is whether they win the Champions League or not. But that's happened. English clubs have won the Champions League loads of times. You know, Liverpool won it 6 times, United won it 3 times. It's a more common thing for English football clubs to win the Champions League than to win the league 3 years in a row. And then no men's team have ever won the English domestic treble. And 4 years on from it happening, it still doesn't feel like, well, it feels to me like it's been glossed over that we won all the domestic trophies. You know, I think people will always go back to the spending and things like that. But, yeah, I think regardless of the charges, it isn't just focused on that, but that is the crux of it, you know, that we were just another team 15 years ago and now we're, you know, dominant, basically.
Yeah. Alan, do you feel like people assume City fans don't value the success because of the money? I get this impression. What I mean by that is... I always seem to hear from rival fans when I speak to them in the workplace, when I speak to them, you know, when I see friends and family who support different teams, it always seems to come back round to this point of they think I see City through the same prism that they do, and they see City as a team that it's artificial success because they've spent a lot of money. Whereas I don't feel that. I feel the success because I'm living it. I'm there in it every week. I have the pressure of every single game of having to win to, you know, those title races where, you know, City and Liverpool went toe-to-toe to the end of the season. The pressure that you feel on every single one of those games, like, the outside world doesn't see that. And I'm wondering if basically, a lot of the criticism comes from that viewpoint, that a lot of people see City's success as not real and assume that City fans see it in the same way. But we feel it, don't we?
I think it's not just that. There's the historic fatalism of being a Manchester City supporter that, for those of us of certain ages, goes back for decades. And to suddenly see all this happening in front of us, it's not that we just turn up to every game thinking we're going to win, we're going to trounce them, we're going to walk all over them. The only time I ever felt sure that we were going to absolutely walk over a side was about 20 minutes into the second leg of the Champions League semi-final, because literally, but that was more Real Madrid not showing up.
Yeah, the one time turns out to be against the best team ever in the Champions
Absolutely.
League.
Yeah, I couldn't believe how little spine they showed, to be absolutely honest. I mean, we played brilliantly, but they just seemed to be absolutely cowed by us. But apart from that, no. Every game, because you never know when a Crystal Palace is going to come along.
Mm.
You never know.
Well,
when
you do.
Teams...
You know when it's going to. It's Spurs away, isn't it? That's the game that's coming along. Yeah,
that's our bogey these days. It used to be Everton a few years ago. Now it can't be Everton for obvious reasons because they're dreadful. But yeah, Spurs. Spurs is the one now, and there are also little slip, like the Brentford game before the World Cup, where probably Kev was probably trying to work out what he said to his teammates after that Guardian interview or something like that. You know, you never know when it's all going to... It could all come crashing down in a particular game. And there's something that runs through the club like Blackpool through a stick of rock that the supporters feel. There's sometimes people go on about the atmosphere in the Etihad, and I think it actually is this constant nervousness. We're a basket case bunch of supporters sometimes because we know the past. We know empires rise and fall.
Yeah, does that feeling though make it? Is it that kind of makes the success more valuable to you as a City fan? Is it that kind of, even though people outside don't see the jeopardy, is it that when City win the latest Premier League title, it isn't boring because you know the work that's had to go into to achieve that latest title?
Exactly. You look at what happened to the teams around us this year, and you look at the sheer grit and determination and the body language of some of the players towards the ends of games when they are clearly absolutely knackered. I thought Kev looked particularly wrung out when he came off last night, and Bernardo early on in last night's game was looking... he was playing a strange role, but he was looking about as comfortable as a man who'd had... Ferret shoved down his trousers after he shat his pants. And part of that's just tiredness. Those players are tired. People underestimate just how much of a... They think they just come out fresh for every game, but it doesn't work like that, does it?
Yeah.
It's the cumulative effects of a season must be wrecking on any player. And to actually see that through to a possible treble... I don't want to jinx it. We've only got one of them at the moment. But see that coming through to a possible treble, to even be within sight of it, is absolutely superhuman. Yeah. I'll never stop valuing that, because people are people. It doesn't matter how much money is there. People get tired. People get knocks. People get injured. People have things going on in their lives other than football. They're human. And it's a superhuman endeavour that we've seen.
Yeah. And at the same time, though, Liam, I mean, like in the context of the Premier League charges, they do have a place in this discussion. I mean, Guardiola said this week. Have a listen to this.
We accept it's there. If it happens, it happens. We happen in the UEFA, and after you know what's going to happen. Now it's the Premier League. So let's go. Come on, 24 hours, sit down, talk, and both sides, lawyers. Present. Don't wait 1 year, 2 years. Why don't do it quickly? Come on, and as soon as possible for the benefit for everyone. So let's go. Let's do it as soon as possible, please.
Now you can understand him wanting a quick resolution to all this, because it feels like there is a cloud hanging over the club with this ongoing at the moment, doesn't it? But at the same time, I just kind of wonder, like, do you feel that City are guilty no matter what the outcome of this is? Is that what people think?
Yeah, I mean, I look at it very similar to the. UEFA charges a couple of years ago. As much as the statement from CAS, showed that we weren't guilty, I don't think that changes people's perception of the club. you'll get the usual suspects in the media still writing articles about it. You'll, you know, have fans of rival clubs thinking, you know, the worst of us and things like that. But, you know, it's, for me, it's just one of those things where, you know, I watch football because of what's on the pitch, not for what's going on outside. So, I try not to let it really bother me. And to be honest, all the people I work with who support different teams, when we talk about football, we just talk about what's on the pitch. No one talks to me about, has it clouded what you're doing at the moment? And because at the end of the day, I mean, how can what happened over the past week or two, you know, what's the connection there with what Mancini was getting paid in 2009 or whatever, yeah, whatever the charges all are? So, I think for some people, it's like, you know, they see what City do as sports washing, or whatever they want to call it. And I think this is like the opposite of that, that people are going to be influenced by these charges. Whether we get found guilty of any or none at all, people have got their minds made up and nothing's going to change that. So let them crack on, let them have sleepless nights about the parrot.
Yeah. Alan, can you just ignore it all until there's a judgment?
I do, to be honest. I find this technical stuff in the extreme. You know, as Liam said, it's what goes on in the pitch that matters. And, you know, it's... the lawyers are going to argue it out, and my feeling is it's all going to peter out to a great extent. Some of the charges will be dropped. I don't think Pep's going to get his instant judgment either. This is going to drag on for years, and after a while, people are going to be so sick of it they'll want it to go away regardless. So I think I obsessed about it for about a day and just put it back to the back of my mind again. And
yeah,
Nobody else talks to me about it much. You know, it's just something that, oh, some journalist people wanted to hark on about it. People wanted to remind everybody about it. But of course, a club is innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah, you know, I guess rival fans might say that if you've spent too much money in bringing this team in, then you have an unfair advantage on the pitch. Do you give that any weight?
Not an awful lot of weight, especially if it's coming from a club that might have wanted to, say, hack into our databases or something like that. You know, there are sharp practices. Everyone's looking for an edge somewhere, aren't they?
Yeah.
And rules, I'm sure rules aren't followed to the absolute letter of the law. You know, people will try and get whatever advantage they can.
The other issue that's kind of with the narrative of City's title win this time around has been the issue of dominance and it being too easy for City. We've kind of touched on this already, but have a listen to what Guardiola thinks of this.
And the people are going to say now that but next season is going to come back, so just Manchester City can win the Premier League. They're stupid comments, so... And the stupid comments, the only problem is you have the stupid comments in your head. As much as you are not in your head when the people say, nah, it's easy for Man City to win next season in the Premier League, is because you accept these stupid comments are in your head. But as much as you are not in your head, remain stupid comments. This is the reality. So the next season will be tougher. Because all the clubs want to beat us. So they don't like to be, see the all the time win. They want to beat you. But that is the challenge.
So, Liam, I know that City put in a lot of hard work. You know City do. Alan knows. Guardiola knows. Does it bother you then if other people don't see it or don't like City's football because you can enjoy it? You can see what's what the product of his hard work is on the pitch.
No, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's my hobby. It's not a rival supporter's hobby to think City are great. You know, City have a culture of winning throughout the club. They have been dominant. There's no way around that. But at the same time, it's the mindset and the mentality that's got them to where they are now. You know, they'll just keep on going the way they are. And you know, if people aren't going to like that, you know, I remember 15 years ago when United won three leagues in a row. And I would have come out with all sorts of nonsense at the time because I was, you know, I hate that club. And I don't ever want to see
it's
them
it's
be
a safe
successful.
Space, don't worry.
Yeah. But, you know, in rival teams who don't like City, then, you know, they're entitled to their opinion. If they think it's boring, then, yeah, I mean, I didn't find it particularly exciting when other clubs have been dominating. So, yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah. I do wonder about the narrative of there being no jeopardy in games, Alan, because that's not how I felt for large parts
that
of this season.
That is a part of the bollocks, isn't it?
Yeah, I just, I
not,
think
not
back to...
words.
Yeah, I think back to some games at the end of this season, even though City have actually won the title quite comfortably in the end.
Yes.
Like 3-0 up against Leicester takes all the best players off. Leicester score and suddenly we're all chewing our fingernails. Leeds had a nervy end.
Absolutely.
Fulham was not an easy win, but City have done it. And I mean, ultimately, City consistently pass all of these tests. And I think what happens is people look at that and go, well, that's the money they've spent, instead of saying, actually, that's what a good team they are.
Yeah, I touched on this before when I said put me in charge of City with all that money and watch it all fall apart. Watch it look like Agent Phoenix Bates is bringing it down from the inside when in fact I would just be damned incompetent.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's been a lot of work to get us where we are. I mean, don't forget, Pep won nothing in his first season here, didn't he?
Yeah, I thought we'd broken him back in the day.
Yeah, but... These things take time to get right. This is a difficult league, you know. It's not like some league where a Bundesliga striker could come in and just like dominate us completely. None of that happened. But regardless of that, I think it's a testament to the patient building work that Pep has been doing and the work behind the scenes as well. That we've actually got to this point. I had a very interesting chat. Well, I was out in Kiev once, and I bumped into Peter Schmeichel. And
how hard?
Well, put it this way, I came up worse. But we were talking about Spain's dominance in international football at the time. So I think you can guess why I was in Kiev. And I said, do you think that it's bad for the game for one team to be so far above everybody else in terms of skill, in terms of trophies? And he looked at me like I was mentally deficient and just said, look, says, people said exactly the same about, you know, when I was playing at United. So said exactly the same things. The responsibility of the other teams is to give us a competition. That is the end of it. If we're head and shoulders above everybody else, then they need to be looking to their laurels. They can't be bleating on about money or whatever. They need to find ways. Get on that video machine, watch the games, work out ways to beat us. But you know something? I would absolutely, I was about to say I would love it, but that would make me sound like Kevin Keegan. It would be absolutely fantastic to watch the game evolve around Pep's revolution and watch it evolve and adapt, and it will, trust me, it will.
Yeah. The final point to this this discussion, Liam, I want to put to you is we've seen a lot this last week of kind of, well, Arsenal never really had a chance anyway. That, I mean, to quote Alan, is just bollocks, isn't it?
it is complete bollocks. I mean, you know, I listen to this podcast every week, David, as I've told you many times. And, you know, if you went back about 5 or 6 weeks, there's no way you would have thought that by beating Everton, we would have won the league effectively, because you just wouldn't have seen it at all. And, you know, I think back to times over the season. You know, I remember driving back home from Tottenham away in February. And, you know, it was the following day when we had these charges put against us. But, you know, when you think about in January, Arsenal brought in Trossard and Jorginho, two really top-line Premier League-proven players to come in and boost their chances. And, I mean, I wasn't a big fan of his at the end of it all, but, you know, as we got rid of João Cancelo, and, you know, he was a big part of us winning the league back-to-back over the past two seasons. And we were, I don't know how many points we were behind at that point, but for us to turn it round, you just never saw that coming. And
the idea that it was inevitable is just, it's just not true, is it?
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Ridiculous. And, you know, I always put when the opposition, when I feel like they're very good that we're up against, so, you know, the last couple of years, it's usually been Liverpool, I get into the mode of putting money on them to win. So at least it sort of softens the blow a bit for me. And I lost about 150 quid on Arsenal at the start of April. So I do think it is down to me a little bit why they bought it. but, you know, two things. You didn't see City going on the run they have done. And you didn't see when Arsenal had 50 points after 19 games, they were on track to get to our 100 points. And, you know, you never saw it going. Since the international break at the end of March, nobody knew that it was going to be like this. And, you know, like a big reason why I stayed in Brighton last night is because we booked a hotel because we thought that there's a slight chance that could be the night that we win the league. And that was only 2 weeks ago that we booked it. Yeah. And we already won it before then. So, yeah, I mean, it's to say that it was, well, three out of the five leagues that Pep's won has been some of the three most exciting leagues that, you know, title races that there's ever been, I'd say. I mean, the one in 2019 just was exhausting. Last year, I mean, after we won it against Villa last year, I just go home because I felt ill. Yeah. After that day, and then today, this season, again, you just up until 3-4 weeks, well, until we beat them, really, there was no way you thought that it's on properly, because it wasn't in our hands until April, was it?
Ad-free episodes are available on Patreon. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Let's dig into that a little bit more, because as little as 7 weeks ago, City were 8 points off Arsenal at the top of the Premier League table, albeit with a game in hand. A month and a half later, Ilkay Gundogan was lifting City's third title in a row and fifth in six seasons. I've been looking at all the major turning points of the season. After 24 Premier League matches, Manchester City's longest winning streak was three games. That the team would go on a run, even back in March, wasn't a foregone conclusion. Here's journalist and City fan Dan Burke speaking on the podcast ahead of City's 4-1 win over Liverpool.
To be honest, I'm not hugely confident about the chances of putting a run together. I suppose it depends what you mean by putting a run together, because it seems like, to me, we probably need to win all 11 remaining games to win the league this season, which is quite a big ask. You know, City have been in good form for the best part of 2 months now. We're looking really good before the international break. I still don't feel like they are as strong as they were last season. And if we need to win all 11 remaining games, I'm not sure I can see us doing it this year. I saw someone on Twitter the other day saying, oh, if City win the next 18 games, they win the treble. And it's like, yeah, it sounds lovely and simple when you put it like that, but it's not that simple in practice, is it? And I don't know how helpful it is to look at it in those terms psychologically either, really. I think the focus just has to be on beating Liverpool this weekend and then looking ahead to the next game.
As we know now, City did go on a run. They've got three games left of the 18 that Dan mentioned, and they now only need to win two of them to secure a treble. The team have been relentless in the last 3 months, winning 18 of the last 21 games. But we can't overlook an Arsenal collapse. Here's how Arsenal fan Michael Kashani was feeling when we spoke to him after their draws with Liverpool and West Ham.
A little despondent at the moment. I think you've got to be bullish at the time of this. We've come too far to give up now. But there is this feeling now that this might just be that bridge too far. We might be running out that little bit. But I'd say Southampton isn't... Well, it's going to be where the focus is, but it's not where the worry is. I'd say, obviously, there's City right after that. There's Chelsea at home after that. And I think the next game after that is Newcastle away. You'd hope that everyone's going into Southampton with a calm head because, you know, it's Southampton at home. You know, famous last words. But, yeah. If you screw up there, you don't deserve to win the title.
And Arsenal did mess up that Southampton game. After losing to City the following midweek, they lost two of their next four. That run of 9 points from a possible 24 opened the door for City to win the title, an opportunity that they didn't turn down. That Arsenal downturn was as unexpected as City's upturn, though. The first half of the season was steady but not spectacular from City, but there was one win that stands out. The Athletic's Paul Bayus explains how the performance against Fulham convinced Guardiola to sign a new contract.
He always said that it depended on not just him, not just the fact that he's happy with his friends working at the club and the work environment, but the main thing was to really know that the players were still following him. It has happened in trainings, watching the daily attitude of the players, seeing the efforts that the club has done to bring the right players from Holland to Akanji. So basically, Fulham was the final assurance that all of this had happened. I can remember that day that Pep came up to the press conference after the match with a huge delay, and it was produced by his personal choice to make a speech in the dressing room, confessing to the players how proud he was feeling and that this was the reason why he is a manager, to see performances and the kind of commitment that he saw.
Despite that, City lost their next game, the last one before the World Cup. When the season resumed, they took a while to find their feet too. There were wins, but they weren't always convincing. And after beating Spurs at the Etihad, Guardiola called out his team's attitude publicly and delivered some home truths.
I want a reaction for all the club, all organisation, not just the players, the staff and everyone. Happy flowers, team. Happy flowers organization. Ah, it's good, good. No, I don't want to be happy flower. I want to beat Arsenal. Away, you know? But if we play in that way, Arsenal will destroy us. Will beat us. Will beat us. And it's not, I said, that the people say, ah, Pep, you don't want to win the Premier League. Of course you want the Premier League. No, when I said, I don't care the Premier League last week against, of course I don't care. I want to see my team. You know? My team in many, many things. This is one I want to do it.
You do wonder how much that press conference had an impact on the rest of the season. It was on the 19th of January and City dropped just 5 more points in their run to the title after it. That night, Guardiola made a point of highlighting how the team didn't stick up for youngster Rico Lewis when he was targeted. His emergence as a first-team player was another turning point of the season too.
2 years on the last 3 games was beyond my expectations. The top sides, big pressure, how good he played. We'll review the games, every action he does, defensively in the Etihad box, for example, or in the small spaces inside, or when get the ball outside, everything is well done, everything. He has the ability to read the situations every time in one fraction of a second, and always the decision is good. And he never react after, always anticipate the things with or without the ball. Is so intelligent player, so intelligent.
It's the fullbacks who have been the key to the season in many ways. From Nathan Ake's superb showing as a left-back to John Stones stepping into the centre of midfield, they've been key to how City have found their form in the springtime. Even the departure of Joao Cancelo could be seen as a turning point. Here's the Mail's Jack Gawn speaking on the podcast when the transfer was announced.
Quite a dramatic end to his time at City, really, which has been majorly up and down. Like the highs have been like exceptionally high, and then the lows that culminated in the sort of heated rows and arguments and discussions, however you want to describe it, with Pep. Just a crap way to leave a club, innit? That you've done, you know, that he played so well for solidly for 2 years and was widely regarded as one of the best fullbacks in the world, and you know, a lot of people said that he reinvented the way a left back should be viewed. For it to end like that, with him having not nice talks with Guardiola about game time and things like that, is quite staggering, really.
Plenty were nervous about the move. City had started the season with a shortage of fullbacks, especially on the left, and this confirmed they'd end the season with one fewer. It's probably just a coincidence, but this exchange happened 12 days after Cancelo had been moved on.
Recently, you've said yourself you've not been too happy with the team. Are you happier now? Do you think it's improving? Do you think it's getting to where you'd like it to be?
Especially the way we are behaving in the training sessions since the last 1 week, 10 days, improve a lot. Everyone is so focused, and this is the only chance to have to be competitive. That don't assure you to win. But without that, it's impossible.
It was also at the top end of the pitch where things needed to improve too, and they did for one player in particular when the squad returned from the World Cup. After a holiday where he saw the sights of Home Alone 2, Jack Grealish got to work.
For me, obviously, it was a great night. You know, that's what I've wanted to do, you know, especially recently. I feel like I've been playing well, but You know, I want to come and affect these big games. You know, last month I obviously scored at Old Trafford to make it 1-0, and I thought, up was him. Like, you know, I'm going to get the winner here, and then, you know, we go and concede two. So it didn't really mean anything, the goal. But obviously to score that one tonight was so important.
That was Grealish speaking to Amazon Prime after his goal at the Emirates in City's 3-1 win over Arsenal. That game itself could have been viewed as a turning point, but perhaps more important was the draw the following weekend at Nottingham Forest. City battered Forest, but conceded an avoidable late equaliser.
In games like that, it's better than say anything and go home and take a good sleep, and tomorrow think about the other one. So we played a really, really good game. We knew it, and we did. We missed the second goal, and after the second, we'll arrive the third, and we cannot do it, but we have to look ourselves. We can do better in terms of say, there is something like I said, hey, we have to win, yes or yes. And we have to do it, and today we miss it too many clear chances.
After that, City turned relentless. Bournemouth, Newcastle, Crystal Palace, Liverpool, Southampton, Leicester, Arsenal, Fulham, West Ham, Leeds and Everton were all beaten in a springtime resurgence that also saw Bayern Munich and Real Madrid humbled in the Champions League. That's the win, yes or yes, mantra in action right there. But there might be another factor in motivating the team. In February, the club was hit by over 100 Premier League charges relating to the finances, and while City may play down the impact, there was no more useful tool for Guardiola to foster an us-against-the-world attitude. City were defiant throughout, from a strongly worded statement on the day to Guardiola's words in the first media conference after the charges were announced.
I'm not moving from this seat. I can assure you, more than ever, I want to stay that. Now, more than ever.
Yeah.
Sometimes I have doubts of 7 years, 8 years, 7 years already is a long time. Not even in any country, so many, many years, imagine in the Premier League. So many, many years. But now I don't want to move on. Not because the people say, yeah, if they lied to you, Pep, they did lie to me. Look what happened with her. I said to them, what happened? So Pep, we did nothing wrong. We prove it. Now is the same case.
From the moment the charges were announced back in February to the moment City lifted the Premier League trophy on Sunday, the team dropped just 2 points. It was the sort of form that hadn't looked likely at any point since the season started the previous August. There's no single factor that's got into City's title-winning campaign. It's definitely not been like any other under Guardiola, though, because it's not long ago that the manager was saying he didn't recognise his team, and now they're in a good position to compete for the treble. There have been a number of moments in the season that could act as turning points, all coming together to get City to the top of the table. The only constant throughout, though, has probably been Erling Haaland's goals.
Hi, it's Nicky Weaver, and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast.
So that was a look at the major turning points. Alan, for you, is there any moment where things switched? I mean, earlier in the show, Liam said the Arsenal game at the Etihad, which ironically I didn't include in that feature. But are there any moments that happened in the season where you thought, this could be the thing that galvanises City?
I think it was the response to dropping points against Forest.
Yeah.
For me. That felt, I suppose you look at the way they played against Arsenal, it doesn't seem so bad in hindsight. But at the time, that felt devastating. That felt absolutely devastating. And there had to be a change from there on in. I think Forest was a galvanising moment for the club finding themselves where they are now.
Yeah, we do. We'll do bad take amnesties at the end of the season, Liam. And I've got an absolute corker of one of these to come up, because there's a point at which I gave up on the season. Did you ever give it? You know exactly what it was. Did you give up at any point?
I never gave up. I always felt like if we could be within 5 points of them when they came to the Etihad, then we'd have a chance. But I mean, I know I mentioned it a little bit earlier, but yeah, leaving Tottenham, losing 1-0 there, I just didn't see it wasn't so much the, well, obviously the results were not as good as they have been, but also it was just the way we were playing. It wasn't, it just, something wasn't quite right at the time. It wasn't quite clicking. And then, I don't know, I mean, I'm not sure if you could put it completely down to Cancelo leaving. I know that was like a week earlier, or maybe the actually getting charged with these things from the Premier League might have had a bit of a change in mentality. Yeah, exactly. But all of a sudden, you know, it started to feel like what we've got come used to with the way that City play, you know, over the last couple of years. And, you know, even though they weren't all big wins at the start, it was sort of the confidence was growing and growing. And then, I mean, since the international break, you know, scoring four against Liverpool, four against Arsenal, four against Real Madrid, three against Bayern Munich, the confidence has just been through the roof. So, yeah, it's just been brilliant.
Yeah, well, that leads us all nicely onto the final day of the Premier League season at Brentford. Alan, after the comical Chelsea lineup and then a stronger one against Brighton, are you expecting full strength for this one? Because it's obviously the week before the cup final. It's the final warm up game, I guess, to the cup final.
Full strength with a lot of subs.
Yeah,
I'm suspecting it's a matter of letting the team get their mojo together again as a first 11. But also, you've got to manage game time so people, as I say, manage. You know, there's a case for managing the amount of game time they play simply just as insurance more than anything else. We can't afford to pick up injuries at all.
Could you make a case for resting like Haaland or De Bruyne or anyone like that? Or do they just need to play to get into the swing of things? I mean, Haaland's missing chances left, right and centre at the moment, isn't he?
Indeed he is. It looks like he's not going to score as many as Terry Bly. It's, well, you never know. But it's, there could be a case for giving him a rest. I mean, Julian Alvarez, he's more than capable of stepping up. I mean, it's. I think there's a case for giving him a bit of a, just giving. I think there's a case for resting Erling. Yeah, but I'm not so sure about resting De Bruyne too much, though. It's a finer line with him because he can get rusty, I think, a little bit too easily. Yeah. So I think it's a matter of more managing his game time, because I mean I know he is looking tired. You can see it in his body language at times, but he's still turning it on, and we're not quite the same team without him. So I think there's a case for giving him 70 minutes, I think.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
Liam, is there when it hits 3:30 on Sunday, is there anybody in that starting lineup that you, when the team sheet comes out, that you'll wince if you see they're in there, or is it a case of get everybody on the pitch if they're fit?
Protect Rodri at all costs for me. I think he's the one that, I mean, I know we spoke about Phillips earlier on, but I feel like he's the only one where there is a considerable drop off if he was in, you know, if we were to miss for those last two games where, you know, we could be rewriting history. He's the one for me where I don't want him. I don't even want him to travel. I want him to be relaxed. He's played enough games. I don't feel like if he ever has any time out of the team, he takes in much to get back into the swing of things. You know, if De Bruyne or Haaland or Diaz or Stones, if any of them got injured, I know Stones is quite key in the role that he's currently playing, but I would like to see Rodri get a rest and, yeah, just not even risk the thought of him getting injured, because he's not really had many injuries for City the whole time he's been there, been with us. And you know, if he was to then get an injury when it's when we need him, then that'll be devastating for City. Well, not devastating, but I can't go into another Champions League final without a central defensive midfielder.
Yeah, well, I was just about to say, Rodri doesn't need to be injured to not be in the team for the Champions League final. We know that from experience. So, yeah. Alan, I can't remember if it was you or Liam earlier on in the show that talked about that Guardiola might have a starting lineup for the two finals in mind. Is there a chance that somebody could play their way into it? You look at maybe someone like Phil Foden, his performance against Brighton. If he starts again against Brentford and turns it on again, he'll give the manager a bit of a headache. Because I'm thinking that Champions League and FA Cup final lineup might well be the Real Madrid lineup.
Yeah, I think there's a chance. Yeah, Foden could definitely play his way in, and Mahrez as well. I don't think it's a lost cause for either of them. And that they could be playing on, they could be playing one way round or the other. I mean, it could be that one of them gets into the FA Cup final, another one gets into the Champions League final. Sure, I think there's a first 11 that Pep has in mind, but I think that it's, I think his mind, if he's got any sense, his mind will be open to the very last. So, and Phil's playing well enough, you know. It's there's a chance he can get in. You've got to compete, haven't you?
Yeah, there's two names I want to throw at you now, Liam, to finish. The first one is another one that I think possibly should be wrapped up in cotton wool at home safely, not even travel down to Brentford. Manuel Akanji, simply because if Ake isn't fit, I just feel like he's the one that needs to play at left-back rather than Rico Lewis. Rico Lewis has been great, but it's a lot of pressure on a young lad to play out of position in two finals, isn't it?
What, are you saying you wouldn't trust Sergio Gomez there?
I completely forgot he existed, so which is it's probably bad for me and not great for him either.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think, yeah, with Ake being out and us not having another left back again, I think Akanji might be another one where But then you know, if Akanji plays on Sunday and he gets an injury, might he play Laporte at left back?
Maybe.
I mean, I think he's definitely one where you don't want to see him get injured at all. Well, you don't want to see any of them get injured, do you? But by far and away for me, Rodri is the most important one, but yeah, I can see your logic for Akanji as well.
Yeah. What about Ortega? What would you do with him? Because I suspect he'll probably play the FA Cup final, given he's played in the cups this season. But then that means Ederson hasn't played for a few weeks before the Champions League final.
You're the goalkeeper, mate. I mean, do you need? I don't know. I mean, does it matter if Ederson's not played for a couple of weeks, or you know, Ortega went a couple of weeks without playing, and I think he's looked pretty good when he's come in. So yeah. I'd imagine he'll play Ortega in the final, the FA Cup final, because he tends to stick to his guns when it comes to playing the sort of second choice keeper in domestic cups. But regarding Sunday, I mean, it's a flip of the coin for me, really. I don't think it's too important whether he plays or not, Ederson, because he will definitely play in the Champions League final, I think. So yeah, he might want to give him a bit of time between the sticks again, but
give him half each.
I'm not sure how important it is. Yeah, maybe half each. Maybe a third, and let Carson have a go as well.
Yeah, why not? Why not? Right. Well, I'm gonna ask you to predict the unpredictable now, because it's the final game of the season. Nobody knows what's going to happen. We've had no win on the charity bet for last week's show either, so we're running out of games to add to the total. We're collecting for the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. William Hill is giving each of us a £10 correct score single. We've won £1,015 so far, and we'd like to add to that before the end of the season. One more chance to go. Trip to Brentford. Good luck, everyone, for the final day of the season. Alan, what are you having?
Oh, I'm going for 2-1.
2-1 City is 15-2 and £75 if you're right. Liam?
A painfully boring 0-0.
If it happens, I mean, it'd be the first time I think anybody's ever won on the charity bet with a 0-0. If it happens, it's 160 quid, it's 16 to 1. I've gone for the complete opposite, a painfully entertaining 3-3. three old draw, 50 to 1. Let's try and stick some money in the kitty. £500 if I'm right. Never going to happen, is it? Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for more on how to gamble responsibly, take a look at begambleaware.org. We are going to finish with some audience questions. We'll squeeze them in as best we can because we are running out of time. On Twitter, get in touch at Blue Moon Podcast. You can email us as well through the website, bluemoonpodcast.com. Fill in the form there and we'll get to your emails in future shows. We're going to start with one from me. After Guardiola said that his next ambition was to score a goal at Spurs away, Liam, what's your smallest ambition for next season?
To be in Saudi Arabia for the Club World Cup final in December.
Oh, I like that one. I like that one. Alan, have you got any tiny ambitions you'd like to live up to next season?
Tiny ambitions for next season. I would like to... I'd like to see Calvin Phillips in the team sheet without me getting IBS.
Fair play. Jordan on Twitter has been in touch to say, where does next season's kit stand in the list of great City kits? For me, it's one of the best. I hope we wear it in the FA Cup and Champions League finals. Liam, what do you think?
Yeah, I like it. I think I still prefer this year's one. I hope we don't wear it in the FA Cup or Champions League final. But yeah, I mean, it's... Scheme have been pretty good so far, I think. The first year was dire with the purple sleeves, but apart from that, I've quite liked Puma's kit so far. Still number one for me, though, is the first Umbro one after the takeover, 2009-2010. Yeah, that's the best one.
I still play in that one, so that's how long it has lived on. Alan, for you, I don't know if you've seen the news today that the badge on City's current shirt could cause an issue in the Champions League final because the UEFA put a little monogram in the centre of the shirt, and obviously the badge is in the way. So the solution might be wear next season's kit because the badges are not in the centre on that.
Oh, I see. Right, it was a good. Well, that will sell a few kits, won't it? You know, it's always good for Puma, good for everybody. But that's one way of doing it, I suppose. Because the badge is in a strange place there. As far as this kit's concerned for next season, though, I'm not so keen on the neck. I don't like that neck. I never have that neck. I prefer a round neck in plain white if at all possible. You know, it's the lover of Colin Bell in me. You know, I absolutely adore that, but it's not such a bad kit, I suppose. There's been some right monstrosities over the year, but it's not so bad.
You say right monstrosities. Any awful ones that either of you absolutely loved in quiet? You know, on the little secret. the kind of guilty pleasure of City's awful kits.
There was that one from the early 90s that the away kit that looked like sort of purple banana pajamas.
With the yellow pinstripes.
That's the one, yeah. I absolutely adored that. But it seems I was, you know, I was kind of in a, club of one on that one. I used to wear it to Main Road. It's great.
Speaking of pinstripes, there's conflicting views on the Sven season kit, which I love.
No, but surely not.
Quite a few people. I love that kit because it just reminds me of like the greatest days of my life.
Yeah, it's a great kit. I'm not having that. I'm not having that. People don't like that one. Surely not.
Yeah, it's not like a City kit though, is it? I don't think. But it's not a traditional City kit. I don't think with the white pinstripes on it. But for me, and even the away kit, which looks like a seat on a train, the purple one, like that as well.
Yeah, the one for me, the guilty pleasure of mine. Nobody seems to like the fluorescent yellows that we have, and we had one in about 2005. That was the third kit that was yellow and black, and that is beautiful. But everybody hates it. Yeah, exactly. Everybody hates it.
Yeah,
and it reminds me of we had a third kit in the late 90s that I think we only played in at QPR and Stockport once. That was yellow and black. That had like black bars on it and yellow bars down the set. Like beautiful kit. But no, nobody remembers it fondly. Don't know why. Final question for this week's show goes to Annie on Twitter, who says, what's the most unexpectedly fun final day of the season you've had watching City? Brentford should be a dead rubber, but sometimes these can produce the most entertaining games. Alan, anything that that you can remember on the last day that has been...
I remember a lovely last day of the season in 1991, I think it was. Yes, 1991. That was the season that we put both of the relegated teams down ourselves. And we relegated Sunderland on the last day of the season. And it was such a fun game because Sunderland really brought their A game to it. And we went ahead through Quinn. And then I think Marco Gabbiadini levelled the scores. And then they went ahead through Gary Bennett, who was one of our old youth players.
Mm.
So there was a certain sense of jeopardy to it. By half-time, it was 2-2. We won 3-2. Regrettably, Luton stayed up. But not the Luton that we have now. They're not so clever.
Feel free to hold a grudge. It's fine.
David Cleese, the dance. 1983. But, you know, it's that it was a gorgeous day, crisp shadows on the pitch. I watched the game in sunglasses. It felt absolutely fantastic. It was so much fun. And to come away with a win, and we finished one place above United.
Yeah.
Which we all sang, we're the pride of Manchester. I thought, well, that's it set for a few seasons now. And the narrator, he had another thing coming, though.
yeah,
it was a great day that day.
Liam, any for you that you didn't expect to be good fun, but then suddenly you had a whale of a time on the final day?
Two stand out in my mind. I mean, obviously, it was expected on Sundays to be a good day out, but... the often memed 8-1 against Middlesbrough. I think anyone that was there that day will tell you that the atmosphere was rocking.
You've got to make your own form sometimes, haven't you? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, for me, that's like probably like the last proper typical City day in a way. It's because
with knobs on.
You know, the going there. I mean, I was living in Sheffield at university at the time, and it was the weather was like how it's been this week, you know, really hot, really sunny. You know, I was wearing a pair of shorts and a T-shirt, got to Middlesbrough, and it was like you'd gone to February, not to the sort of east of the country, and it was freezing. Everyone was like, you know, dressed in summer stuff, and oh, God, it was horrible. The weather was shocking. You know, everyone was with had like sort of Sweden flags because of Sven, and we got hammered. And the one thing that people were bothered about was because we wanted to get into the Fair Play League, you know, the UEFA Cup via the Fair Play League, I should say. And Dunn got sent off within about 10 minutes, didn't he? So that was great. I mean, it kicked off a bit at the end at the front, which wasn't so good. But apart from that, it was a good day. And then the only other one where this is me really burting it up here, when City played West Ham away last game of the season in 2010.
Yeah.
That same day. We drew 1-1, and I don't remember virtually anything about the game. Wright Phillips scored for us.
A header, no less. Which,
yeah, exactly, yeah. But I was down there. I got like the first train in the morning with two of my mates who supported Chelsea. And that day, they beat Wigan at home, I think 8-0 or something like that, to win the title. And it was sort of, United had just won it three times in a row in between 2007 and 2009. And then Chelsea won it that day. So, and this is before City and Chelsea were like, we're not really rivals now. We don't really see them in the same way we look at United and Liverpool. But so I got the train from Upton Park over to Stamford Bridge and had a great night celebrating them winning the title, basically. So that was good. And I was wearing my City shirt there as well. I wore that season's third shirt, the white with the red and black sash. Yeah. And there was a lot of them saying like, what are you doing here, mate? And I was like, well, I'm celebrating you like winning the title, but didn't think 2 years later that it would be us winning it. So yeah, it was a good way to see how people celebrated things.
Excellent. I'd just like to chuck in, unexpectedly fun, we beat Everton 5-1 on the final day at the first season at Eastlands, and nobody saw it coming. It had not been a great season. I think we'd just survived either the week before or the fortnight before by beating Newcastle. It, out of nowhere, we turn up on the final day and stick five past Everton, a team that we generally didn't beat either. So it was real.
I remember one chop and then Elka were brilliant that day.
Yeah, yes. Absolute great fun. But that's it for this week's Blue Moon podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you also to my guests for this one, Liam Wright.
Thank you very much.
And Alan Phoenix Bates.
Oh, thank you.
Don't forget, there's a bonus show every Monday for Patreon backers, and there's a short clip of this week's coming up shortly.
That was the Blue Moon podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
I worked in a restaurant at the time that kind of was linked to a pub next door, the same pub that I watched most of the games in this season. And I don't know if you remember me talking about Eugene Valentine, the barman.
Yeah.
I talked about him in the show before, the best barman in County Down. But it was like a dead old fella's bar, and they just used to love watching the horse race. And I was hearing word on my phone that it was 3-0 after 6 minutes. So I went in to look at the screen in the pub, and horse racing was still on. So I went over to Eugene and was like, Eugene, fucking hell, man. Sit here winning 3-0 and the horse racing still on. Could you not get it flicked over? And he goes, fuck off.
Yeah.
He did, like, with the thumb as well, you know, like a kind of like get back to work into your restaurant kind of thumb. Yeah. He just was absolutely like, clear out, don't tell me how to run my bar. Yeah. So I was absolutely buzzing about this 3-0. I couldn't wait to run in and see City on the screen. And instead, lost myself a bit in talking to him that way, you know, like, get the football on. And he told me where to go.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.